The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Steve's on mute. Steve, why are you on mute?
That's not going to work, Steve.
Steve, we don't need to see you. We need to hear you. It's a podcast. This is the guy in audio and visual.
There we go.
Let's start then. Welcome to the weekend podcast. It's an Easter special. Steve, cue the jingle.
Easter special, yeah.
Oh, I was expecting a higher, you know, production quality on that, to be honest.
He's been spending all day on that. That's yeah. Quite
Steve, to be honest, that 300 quid wasn't worth that. I thought it was a bit more, you know.
Where did the 300 quid go?
Exactly. On that jingle. Yeah. You get what you pay for, I suppose. I'm certainly paying for that. Anyway, boys, it's a weekend podcast. It hasn't been a week. And do you know why they have Easter eggs? Do you know why they have Easter eggs?
For Christmas. What's that?
Well, back in biblical times, you used to give Easter eggs to each other. Massive Easter. Back then, of course, with lack of inflation, they were huge. And now we've got shrinkflation.
Right.
They're tiny, and, you know, back then they were nothing, but they used to, you know, all the tribe, Jesus and the guys, used to give eggs to each other, you know, Cadbury's, but they weren't little then, they were massive. But, of course, it's gone through shrinkflation and all that stuff, so that's why the tradition has carried on, you know, giving Easter eggs, chocolate eggs, Cadbury's chocolate eggs. It's always, you know, been on for years, that is.
Right.
I have no idea.
Steer away from religion.
I have no idea what the relevance of chocolate Easter eggs are at Easter. Do you have any idea?
No.
Anyway, and everyone sort of brushed over it because these companies like Cadbury's and the like are making money from it.
It's like Santa Claus being red is due to Coca-Cola, isn't it? It's like the Easter eggs is due to Cadbury's or someone, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's done marketing Easter.
Exactly.
Commercializing Easter.
I do think the amount of chocolate on an Easter egg is a perfect Saturday night treat.
Oh, Steve, years ago, they're getting smaller, though, aren't they? They are getting smaller. Yeah.
But it's enough for now, you know.
Do you eat a whole Easter egg in one go?
Every weekend.
Clearly. Wow.
Have you seen the price of cocoa, by the way? Cocoa's doubled in the last few weeks. It's gone from $5,000 a ton to $10,000 a ton. So Easter eggs next year are going to be very expensive. Very expensive. But, you know, that's what we do. Commercialization is amazing, isn't it? What they do is hijack a religious sort of festival or something, and they brand it up, and they sell it to you, and they say, oh, no, this has always been tradition, yes. Jesus and the guys giving each other Cadbury's cream eggs and all that stuff. Oh, yeah, very popular back in the day, that was. Oh, yeah. Crack on with the guys, just buy the eggs, shut up. Apparently about rebirth, but somebody said 10 years about rebirth, Jesus coming back from the dead, you know, that's apparently, and he rolled a big stone away from the cave, apparently. So that's a very tenuous link.
To be fair, if more religions followed the thing of Easter, of just giving each other chocolate eggs, I think we'd be in a better world, wouldn't we?
Yeah, but the Christian festivals are all about stuffing your face full of stuff, aren't they? All about it. Everything has been lumped in with just Christmas. You know, stuff yourself to your sick. Easter, stuff yourself to your sick. Those two.
Yeah.
Anyway, boys, the market. If you listen to this first time, it's not long now. If you haven't subscribed, please go to sharepickers.com/subscribe because the website's coming along nicely. Guys, you've got access. Have you sort of checked it out?
Yes.
Stephen, have you checked it out?
No.
Excellent.
I'm not even going to lie.
Good. Well, attempt to lie, Steve. It's funnier when you attempt to lie. Let's try that again. Steve, have you checked it out?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, okay, which bits do you like?
The login, I thought, was particularly
You like the login process?
I really like the login part.
Yeah, I haven't worked
really
on that.
Smooth.
Yeah, I haven't upgraded that, Steve. That's still the same, the login process.
I like, I'm old school, I like the old one.
Okay. But, but what I've done, apart from other things, is I've got my watch list on there, you've got, the webinar on there, there's blogs where I buy and sell stocks, I put blogs up. But I've created this thing called Stock Scores. And so I'm obsessed with finding a super stock. You know, a super stock is a kind of stock that's 10 bags. And it can be done because they have all these traits, you know, all the last 10 bags have all their traits. They all started below 100 million market cap. So why look elsewhere? Why look elsewhere? There's plenty of opportunities sub 100 million market cap. You can't be dabbling all over the market looking at this stock, you know, FTSE 100 companies down to micro cap. There's too many. It's too many. It's like, you know, if you go into... Do you know what I quite like? I wear the same style T-shirt, not the same one, every day, pretty much. And it's I've got like 20 of them. And I just know they fit. Okay, different colours. But even that, I'm thinking, should I just go black or just dark blue? So simple. Because you know what you're looking for. And you put it on, you're happy with it, you know? It's like
Mark Zuckerberg wardrobe.
Yeah, what does he wear? Just hoodies, isn't it?
Yeah, it was Steve Jobs, wasn't it? He just wore that black T-shirt the whole time.
Yeah, but you realise you shouldn't spend time on stuff that's not that important. I'm a 53-year-old bloke. I don't give a toss about fashion. You know, it's not my thing. I'm not spending. What shall I wear today in the office on my own? Ooh.
When did you stop caring about fashion? Out of interest, what year was it?
ever since I've known you.
Yeah. No, I used to be.
25 years.
I used to, you know, try it a little bit. You know, I used to try and go with the trend a little bit, but it's held no fascination with me, never. And so I think, you know, anyway, what I'm saying about the markets, you know, if you know 60% of the biggest winners come from sub 100 million market cap, spend your time fishing there, you know, in the waters, in the small pond where the big fish are, or there could be big fish. There's going to be big fish.
I have a question about those.
Yes. Man at the back with the big ears. Yes.
Okay, Steve. the old ones are the best.
Yes, man with the lisp. Go.
I mean, it's an amazing thing because the time you've put in, the legwork you've done, thanks very much. That's good. I don't know quite how to use it.
There'll be a video on that. So essentially, it starts off.
Yeah,
with,
I know.
It's 100 stocks, right?
Yeah.
And they're ranked by the most important metrics of all.
I get that.
Yeah. So first of all, you'll see the sort of list there of all these companies. Now they've all got to be generating revenue because. I know a lot of people listening out there will be trading these oil and gas stocks that have no revenue, or these biotech companies hoping to become rich because they've got the next cure for cancer. But you know what? That is not where the sustainable money is made. The big winners, and I'm talking about 1,000+% over many years, are revenue-generating stocks. The revenue is growing. That drops through to the bottom line, you know, the cash, the profit, the cash piles up. And they do that multiple years on a trot. So that's what you're looking for. So these metrics are based on that, you know. And by the way, I mean, there's going to be a month where I open the membership thing four, and then there's already several hundred people on the waiting list. And I can't have too many because it becomes an admin job. People forgetting their login and password and all this stuff. And when you get hundreds of people doing that, it's like literally, I'm not looking at my stocks. I'm just dealing with admin rubbish, you know? So it'll be limited. But yeah, so you've got a list there, all ranked, okay? And you click on a company, it's got company information, you know, the logo, clips through the logo, it goes through the company website. And then you have the information like market cap, revenue, all that stuff. Is that quite simple so far? It's just got the basic company information you want to know, you know. So,
yeah, got it.
Yeah. And then essentially what you're looking for at the top of the list, what it is, and I'm going to keep a track of the top 10 stocks in this company. If they stay up there, how do they perform? Because essentially, it's dynamic, you see. So, for example, there's a company on there today that was in the top five. Now, every night, the share price is updated, the shares in issue updated. And so that affects if a company rises quickly, for example, and it was, you know, ranked quite highly on growth value, then it'll drop because its valuation's gone up. It's less potential, you see. And so it'll drop down the scale. So the companies at the top there have everything. They've got good growth. Good value, they're healthy, they're efficient, they've got momentum in the chart, and they've got potential. That means the broker sees, you know, potential of more than 40% within 1 year. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the kind of thing you're looking for, because you do 40% a year.
But there, like, you know, what you're always looking to do is scale in, isn't it? So,
yes. Oh, do you know what? Yes. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah. Love a bit of scaling.
This is one thing I've always. And you know, in the bull market, I've had to adjust a heck of a lot in the bear market. It's different market completely. It's like how can I liken it? It's like I suppose it's like being David Beckham, right? Before that Euro Cup, where was it? Euros or where he kicked that guy? Was it Euros? Was that where?
World Cup 98.
World Cup 98, where he was loved and adored. And then that's the bull market, you know? Can't do anything wrong, pretty much.
Yes. And then overnight.
Yeah, then overnight you become the villain. That's the bear market.
Right.
And you have to adjust a little bit, you know, investing. And so it's really that. So, and essentially, this is, I'm releasing this book. I'm finding it hard towards the end, finishing this book off, because it's about, you know, resources and stuff I use and all that stuff. And I'm finding it a bit clunky, really.
Just put the end.
Yeah, that's it. Halfway through the sentence, I'm bored. I'm off to look at some socks. So cheers.
Yeah. Bye.
I didn't know how to end this book, so the end. What was I saying?
My question was about scaling in.
Oh, yes. And so in that book, I basically say, you know, private investors lose money for two reasons. Steve, tell us why.
They gamble. They don't put a risk strategy in place.
The risk strategy in place.
Yeah.
They buy at the wrong time and they sell at the wrong time.
Yeah, can we...
There we go.
Can we try and form a sentence here, Steve? You said it before. You said it to me on text. That's why I asked you. I wasn't trying to set you up for a fall there. You said before, essentially, people don't know when to sell. And that's the thing, you know? It's like, first of all, they hold on to losers too long. Right, and not only that, they go too big, and they don't even average down. Like I say, in a bull market, it's not too bad doing that, but in the bear market, what happens is you get it wrong, and you average down. And what happens to your portfolio? Essentially, that big stock you've been averaging down is dragging your whole portfolio down, and you get to the point where even if you've got a couple of winners in there, it's not going to make any difference because you know it's like a boat tipping on one side, too much weight. You've got literally it's going under on the one side. It doesn't matter. It's bringing down your whole portfolio. So the key is, first of all, these are two things: holding losers too long, selling wins too early. So first of all, start small, and you can do all the research you want in a company, but you may get the timing wrong and all that stuff. And then when you tend to go a bit too big, you think about the reward too much. And that's one of the things, focusing on, you know, reward rather than risk all the time. Focus on risk first. Say, how can I... And you tend to do this after bear market as well. How much am I going to lose on this? Now, if it gets to the stage where you're happy to lose what you put in, that's a small amount. And it's a small amount. So very sort of way you are not over-risking, you know? Now, if it starts going in the right direction, and this is why I look at microcaps, because they start going in the right direction, you're talking about a multiple return on your money, potentially. That's several 100%. So there's plenty of time to realise there's a winning stock. And you do realise that you've had stocks, we've all had stocks, where you pick it starts going in the right direction, almost immediately or within soon, and you realise the momentum's there, they release more good news, that this is now a winning stock. That happens. There's plenty of time to average up on those kind of things, you know? Because you only start small, it's fine. Now, if it goes the wrong way, don't really matter, because if it's a good company, it'll come round, but you're happy to sit on a, say, 20% loss if you 1% of your total portfolio value into it. It's nothing, is it? So, you know, say it's got $100,000, you know, portfolio value, for example, and you put $1,000 into it to start off with. And if you're down by, you know, 20%, you're down to £200 out of 100,000. It's not going to hurt you. You're not going to lose sleep over that. But then think about the risk first. Start small, think about the risk first. And then,
but how do we then use the stock score? So say that company's top five now in stock scores, and there's a metric.
So what's that?
Good.
What that's saying is basically they are the best risk reward profile companies out there. The ones at the top.
Right.
So but you know say, you are.
So use your example. Yeah. Use your example. Put $1,000 in that out of your portfolio, whatever. Lovely. And then, but I want to ultimately put. Yeah, you know, potentially 5-10% of my portfolio because I like it. I like the numbers. I like the way the fundamentals, etc.
Okay, here's how to do it.
How do I do that?
Yeah, here's how to do it, Peter. Shapegates.com/subscribe. Anyway, so here's how I do it, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Steve, keep doing that every 5 minutes, yeah? Like an audio indentation. You can do that, can you, Steve?
Yeah, rather not.
Oh, thanks. Start off, right, with 1%. Listen to this, Steve. This is very simple, right? It's called the 1-20-10 situation, or the 1-10-20, up to you. It doesn't really matter. So 1% of total portfolio, right? You put a stop loss 20% below that, all right? If it rises by 10%, you move the stop loss up by 10%, then you invest another 1% of your portfolio, putting a 20% stop loss below that, you see? And you keep moving that way all the way up. And so you're only, you know, you're hardly risking anything and you are you are increasing your reward potential, but your risk isn't going up because you're in, you know, every time you move up. For example, you got another 10%, and all of a sudden that first investment you put move a stop loss up. It's a risk free investment. The other one you just bet it's got 10%, and the other one's got 20%. So basically, 30% of 1%. That's what you're risking pretty much any one time, and you keep doing that all the way up. I mean, all the way up. You know. Yeah.
And then what are you then scaling in?
So 1% every time. Every time it rises by 10%, but 1% in. Yeah.
But some of these small cap stocks might go 20% in a day, 25%. So you're going to put another
2.5% if it spikes like crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Slow down.
Don't just go crazy.
Yeah, let it settle down a little bit. Because as long as I say 10%, I mean that's minimum. So it's 15%. It's fine. You know, then put it in if you can see it go. But these stocks here are not about pop and drop stocks. They're about sustainable rises for many years. So you've got plenty of time to scale in. This is not about making millions in.
Oh yeah,
two months.
They might release some news that's like, oh yeah, that's a game changer, and they jump 20%, 30%.
That's fine. Oh. It just shows you're in the right stock. Don't worry about that. Sometimes that'll happen. You want that as a good problem to have.
But do you put more in on that day, or do you wait a bit?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. If you come up with good news, you know it's going to rally. You've got some in already, up a little bit. Yeah, I would. But also put that stop loss.
I would what? I'd wait.
No, I'd put a little bit in. For example, the best thing to look at is company news, by the way. I mean, proper businesses. I'm not talking about pop and drop stocks here. Hope high potential stocks with, you know, you can get 100% in a day and it'll come back down and say 90% next day, whatever, because they do a fundraise. I'm talking about sustainable revenue. The thing to look for are trading updates. Okay, that's the thing to look for. Not interim results or final results, because basically what trading updates do, they pre-flag what's coming up in the final results or interim results. And they release a trading update maybe a few weeks, month before. That's when you get the good news coming out. So, and then all of a sudden, then that's reflected in the fuller results.
So just a summary then.
Yes.
Where you said you buy and sell. So you sell at the bottom
and you buy
at the top.
Yes, Steve. That's it.
Right.
That's it. Finally.
So you're buying when it's going up. No. That's right, yes. You're buying when it's going up, you're selling when it's going down.
Well, I don't want to sell. So basically, if I look at something like JD Sports, for example, it's an amazing stock, you know, it did 13,000% or something ridiculous. It did about 200% without even a 10% pullback, right? So it did 200% and then it had a couple of big pullbacks. So literally, once you cover off, once you get to the point where you have a risk-free investment, where, you know, it's gone up like 20% or 20% or more than that, 25%, whatever, just more than 20%. And you cover off where you bought at. It's a risk-free investment, you know? And then you can choose to move that. If it shoots up another 100%, of course, move it up a little bit. So you now then, you can only make a profit. That's a phenomenal situation to be in. You can only make a profit, you know? Even you get the risk-free investment stage, you can only break even. You can't, you take the loss away from, you've removed the risk completely. Now, as it gaps down, and that does happen in crap pop and drop stocks, but it generally doesn't happen in good businesses that are growing and, you know, they've been growing for a while and they're building sustainable. You don't have that gap down nonsense unless a CEO, you know, burns down the building they make the widgets in or something. Doesn't really happen. Or CFO does something like, you know, is putting cash in his pocket. Doesn't happen very often. So those companies, they don't really gap down. So, you know, as long as you cover off that initial, you know, if you get 20%, for example, or 21%, that's minimum. 20% up, you've got a risk-free investment there. Take that opportunity to lock it in. Lock it in, risk-free. Remove the risk, all you got is reward, you know? It'll transform your voice. Because the thing is, people understand, it's not about making money. It's about not losing money.
Yeah.
If you don't lose money, what's going to happen? You can only break even or make money. There's two, three parts of the dynamic. You remove the loss bit. Hey! So that first 20% is crucial.
Yeah.
Once you got that locked in, you can just sit back, relax, and put your legs up on your deck chair and, you know, drink your cocktail in your living room and, you know, pretend you're on a Caribbean beach.
Yeah. I can't be the only person. I'm sure Steve feels the same. Like, I keep, like, looking back at the last 2 years ago. Man, I mean, it's gone the wrong way.
Yeah, but it's taken, do you know what, for me, it's taken the bear market. I said I've learned more in the last 2 years than I've learned in the last 12. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I know now, I did well in the bull market, but I'm now looking forward. I'm going to do super well over the next few years. Absolutely super well. Like a super,
super well.
Yeah, super well.
Right.
Because
sadly, we've got no more money left to go.
No. I mean,
do you know what, Steve? Most of the socks you've got will bounce. I realised, but when I was cutting and saying, you've got to cut here, you've got to cut, I mean, I didn't cut early enough. And one of the things, one of the reasons why I didn't cut early enough was I almost believe, you know, you believe in this nonsense. I'm investing in micro-cap stocks. They are businesses, but they're not big, mature businesses. They are still immature, and they're growing. So they're very volatile. And so it's not when you see these quotes, and I sort of believe these quotes, oh, you always have dips in the stock market, just hold on and go for the ride. Yes, if you're holding, like, you know, sort of Amazon or whatever, or or General Electric or something like that, or like, a Unilever or AstraZeneca, fine. This is not that market. It's a lot more volatile. So, you know, in a downturn, you should cut. When you realize a downturn is happening, somebody's like, oh, I don't care. I like this business. I like this company. No. Never fall in love with the stock or the story, especially in micro caps, because it's brutal out there. They sell off a lot faster, but they also rise a lot faster. So we are coming to the back end. But the good news is Q2 now, guys. Coming to Q2. And ISA allowance has been used up. A new financial year with more people put money in the ISA. And we've got interest rates coming down in June-ish. That's all going to help. So I think the pain has been had. The bear's bitten the arse off us. But now, literally, we're literally patching up the scar on our backsides and legs, whatever. You know.
Okay. I know what you're saying. We're not investing in the Unilevers of the world. But equally, I don't know, Truefin, XPF, I feel like they have a solid business case. I totally agree with you. The pump and dump, the pop and drop, resource stocks and all that. We dabbled with them a few years ago, didn't we? And they made some money. It was good. But no. All that, I get that. But the businesses that the micro caps, small caps that we were or are investing in, I don't know. I still maybe blindly sort of like championing them. But I think. They still are decent businesses. Those mentioned.
They will all rise, okay? They will all rise. Some of these stocks, a lot of these micro caps, they literally are so undervalued. And the UK market is so undervalued. And it'll turn round. It will. I heard reports now, some say, is the AIM market broken because there's so many companies delisting? No. This is how it should work. It's a natural function of a bear market. All those companies have been living on AIM, on free money placings for years and years because interest rates were very low and there's free money. They shouldn't. They're zombie companies. The share prices rose, but their operations weren't improving. They were never going to make money. Some of those companies have to delist, and then you get a smaller pool of higher quality stocks on AIM.
Is that happening? I mean, what's the idea and what the number?
C4XD. I mean, a good company. They perform quite well, okay, but they're a cash hungry company, and they perform very well. And they realise because of the bear market, their valuation has been knocked, and they can't raise as much money as they want to. Now, in the private market, that wouldn't happen because they've got a share price pretty much, and it's not volatile. So they're suggesting maybe I don't know what the net assets are, but I mean, if you look at them, they probably think, well, our assets and everything we're worth about 100 million, but yet the AIM market is valuing us at 20 million. We can only raise money on that valuation, so it's not good for us. Yeah. And so that's what happens.
But obviously, that news broke this week, and that was one of my stocks that still sat there in the fun corner. So a few percent of my portfolio, though, still. Honestly, I hadn't really ever considered that could happen on a stock that is, or for a company that is doing well and is going in the right direction. Yes, they are burning cash, but I mean, they got paid 11 million quid the other month from AstraZeneca. Yeah. I mean, they're not a fly-by-night kind of shady company. They actually genuinely are a good business.
And also, I talked about this with Vadim Alexander, head of healthcare, and he said, it's a bit late. The market's bounced. The bottom is in. It's like, we are in recovery mode. Why didn't you should have done this? Maybe, it's almost like they're going to rally now and miss out on the rally. I think they mistimed it completely. I know you can't time the market, but I think that's a bit short. Unless they've been offered, privately, a lot of money in some way, unless they've been offered that.
Well, the two major shareholders are in agreement, so there is something going on, isn't there? They've been obviously given some assurance that it's a good move. So, it came as a bit of a shock and a bit of, it's not a big part of my portfolio, but it's like, I felt the story was ever evolving, and it was one of those ones that, you know, could come good.
Yeah,
pretty good.
Let me say, the bulk of your portfolio, I mean, I think should be the fund. Should be, like I said, I keep saying that to people. I forget to mention that because I'm all in micro caps. My biggest holding is a fund that holds FTSE 350 companies, the biggest 350 companies listed, and they pay a dividend. That's my biggest holding. It's about 28% of my portfolio now, I think it is. And I put 1% of my total portfolio into that every month automatically. In fact, that's 4% up now. So it's 4-5% up. So it's doing quite nicely.
My two Vanguard funds collectively have grown 14%, I think, in the last year.
That's a
nice little return, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And if you've been doing that, you know, dollar cost averaging, as they say, every month,
then
you get a good average, and over time you do very well. But that's literally your retirement fund, you know. And then if you want to make money to put more into that over time, you invest in microcaps. And there's always room. There's always room for a hope, high potential pop and drop stock all the time. But you've got to not put too much into it. You've got to make sure they have cash. And you've got to make sure there's some news coming up, you know. And if that can happen, then it's good. In fact, we've both invested in one of them recently, Hemogenics.
Yes.
And they've just raised cash. There's a bit of. I guarantee that's the kind of stock that will pop like crazy. Whenever they release any news, it does like a couple of 100%. But it will be, you know, it'll dribble downwards. Sideways, downwards. They release news, and I've looked at it some days. There was one back in the day, they did several 100% in a couple of sessions. And it is one of those stocks that will do that. But they've got cash, and they go into clinical trials. Any positive news now in the clinical trials will rally. So it's good to have, you know, in the odd one of those, but they shouldn't dominate your portfolio, especially not in this environment, because I said, you know, the valuations of these pre-revenue loss-making stocks, you know, the companies are suffering. Like C4XD is suffering. So it's good to have one or two of the fund cut stocks, but the majority should be the fund. And then, you know, sort of maybe 50%, if you're 50, you know, 50% in the fund, and then maybe about, you know, 40% in decent businesses, generating revenue, growing, all that stuff, good valuations. And then maybe 5% or whatever in fund stocks, and maybe 5% cash. But
It feels like like you say, things are turning and the tide is turning, and things. I'm certainly getting a little bit more interested in again and seeing a few rises in stock prices, and yeah, it's hopefully a sign. Like you say, ISA season is upon us now. So,
Steve, what about you, Steve?
Yeah, well, as you know, I'm just putting money into my Vanguard, and I've moved over to Interactive Investor.
Ironically, you're being less interactive.
Very much so. But it's a lot cheaper. It's an interesting platform because you don't, unlike Harry and Larry, where they give you an updated gains and loss through the day. They don't give you that. They only give you the your total gains and loss at the end of the day, so you don't have the.
That's only because you're fun. And what, for individual stocks?
Yeah, well, I've transferred my whole portfolio over there. So, individual stocks going up and down, but when it gives you your total portfolio, that doesn't adjust until the end of the day. So if it's gone down by loads, you'll be like, oh, that's okay. Then at 4 o'clock, you're like, oh my God, yeah.
That's because it's not. That's because it's an ETF, it's not an exchange traded fund. So they do settlements after the close. So that maybe because of that. But Steve, the Vanguard, are you in the Vanguard All Share Index? Is that what you're in?
No, 100%
equity. 100% equity, yeah. It's got about 8,000 companies in there, Steve. Unless there's a nuclear bomb goes off, it's never going to drop that much. You're literally across 8,000 companies.
That's my future now. So I'm just literally going to regularly put my yearly ISA into that.
What percentage of your PORF is it ticking up, Steve?
It's probably getting up to about 80% now.
Wow! All right. Yeah.
Oh wow! Okay.
That's good though. I mean, keep putting money in that, Steve. It's fine.
Because most of the other stocks have almost gone to nothing. So.
I see.
So that should balance out a little bit if they ever kind of recover a bit.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. No, that's fine. Yeah. No, that's good. Cool. Okay. so that's about it. I think, lads. Any plans apart from obviously going to church like the Royals do, you know, having they put that on the TV. The Royals going to church. Is there anything more boring than that? That's a news item.
What time's it on?
How is that a news item? How is that a news item? People actually go and see them. I think, how bereft of any entertainment are these people's lives? If literally their Easter weekend, they go and watch the Royals get out of a car and go into a building. It's like, what? These people, I don't know, they shouldn't be allowed to breed. The Royals, I mean. Not
oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay, don't forget, shapepickers.com/subscribe. It'll be opened up very soon, and that's a list there of potential super stocks. Stocks that will return you loads. Do your own research, of course.
Do your own research, yeah.
I'm still filling in, data on it, because there's still a lot to go yet. So once I get that done, and a couple of other things, then it's I'm gonna get it out there. Get it out there, man. You know what I'm saying? Any plans, Steve, the weekend? Any plans, Steve? Peter, Steve, any plans?
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna see the royal family in church.
Lovely, lovely.
See you there, Pete.
I'm just
I'm giving Steve a lift.
Oh, we'll have to finish on that, I think. Okay, boys, thanks very much, and speak you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.